Good morning and welcome to Seeing with the Eyes of Love. Good morning, Sherry. Sherry?
Hi there.
Sherry? Oh,
yes.
There you are.
I think I was busy pushing mute and unmute buttons as you were doing the same, so I apologize for that. Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, so I will kick us off with our quote for the day,
okay,
which is from an Einstein. A human being is part of the whole called by us universe, limited in time and space. We experience ourselves, our thoughts, and feelings as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of consciousness. This delusion is a prison, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons close to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from our prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all humanity and the whole of nature in its beauty.
But an optical delusion of consciousness. Is that how he said it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another good word for ego.
Yeah, yes, exactly. An optical delusion of consciousness is another way of saying ego or egocentricity. Would you read it again?
Sure. A human being is part of the whole, called by us universe, limited in time and space. We experience ourselves, our thoughts and feelings, as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of consciousness. This delusion is a prison, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons close to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from our prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all humanity and the whole of nature in its beauty.
It's interesting, isn't it, that from a place of egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, there's can be an implication that we should love all that is, that other humans, creatures, and nature. We should do that, but the understanding that it's really difficult and it's something we must do, rather than, as he's framing it so clearly, it's claiming ourselves that we're doing in that. That in a funny sort of way, it's the most personally focused direction we can go in, because what we're doing is expanding the definition of I to include all that is.
So, in other words, what you're saying is that the task in widening the circle of compassion is really not about other people as much as it is about getting out of our own limitations.
Yes, and being able to realize what we are. So the way we've been talking about, of course, is unconditional love. If unconditional love is synonymous with all that is, and there is, as Einstein is pointing out, no separation, that separation is a delusion, an optical delusion of ego, of consciousness, then what we realize in turning our attention to unconditional love is that we get to experience all that we are. And of course, that's that place where we get to where we realize there isn't anybody else. There's only us. Yeah.
Sherry, I would put out that encouragement to have people put themselves in the queue and be wholeheartedly participating in this morning show.
Yes, thank you. Go ahead.
Oh, and then I'll bring our first caller live.
Okay. I just want to say I love it that you said that because wholehearted participation, I've been on a number of calls in a number of situations recently where people are talking about using what universe are you creating and, coincidentally, drawing that same card of wholehearted participation. And so this morning, when I drew a card, it was wholehearted participation. I thought, oh my gosh, you know, maybe this is the movement that life is going because it seems to be coming up everywhere. And then you just said it too. So yes, for us not to be spectators or try to be engaging in an individual sport, but be wholeheartedly participating with all of us in this endeavor.
Okay, here's our first caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jill in New York.
Hello, Jill.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Sweeney.
Hey, Jill.
I have to say, so I took the train up from Philadelphia this morning, and I listened to the recorded calls the whole time. So it's so fun to hear a live call and one I can call in. So I appreciate that I can be here and that you all are doing this.
Oh, well, our pleasure and a pleasure to have you with us.
Yeah, it's great. And I love that reading. What dropped in for me was, you know, I grew up in a part of the country that has both sides. It has all sides, actually. And so, you know, my father actually set a great example of when interacting with people to, it's just more fun to find common ground, I guess. You know, to me, when I saw him do that, set that example, it just seemed like, yeah, it just seemed more fun. It seemed like a celebration of humanity. And it also seemed like a little puzzle, like how do I connect with this person in a way that brings joy, I guess. And so that's one thing that I was thinking of when I heard that quote is, for me it's a nice frame to think about, just to because I do think that. Yeah, we're all made of all the same stuff, and some people have this uncovered, some people have that uncovered, and so how do we, I don't know, I just feel like one thing I can contribute to the world is uncovering my own jewel and then looking for the jewel in everybody I encounter, I guess.
Yes, more fun to find common ground.
Yeah.
Yes, I love the way you're laying that out, because I would guess that sort of with what the Buddha taught, that what we have an opportunity for in this lifetime is to realize all aspects of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's not a plural ourselves, that's a multiplicity of ourselves, right? because in a non-separate reality, it's obvious that that we all have it all. That's, mm-hmm. That would be what's going on there. Mm-hmm. And so for us to find the places that we have, the way you're talking about it, so you and I meet and we are finding the places that we have both uncovered, right, which is that mm-hmm. common ground. Mm-hmm. And then we have the opportunity, depending on the duration of our relationship, to assist one another to recognize and find compassionate acceptance for the parts of us that we haven't yet uncovered, haven't uncovered, haven't recognized, or haven't accepted.
Exactly. And one thing I find, I read a lot about climate change and One thing they found is that when you ask people about climate change in one way, they will answer one way about it. But if you ask about it in another way, they'll answer it in another way. So, I mean, I found that, you know, if you say, you know, would you like to end poverty? Not that many people are that interested in it. But if you say, you know, if your neighbor was hungry, would you want them to get help? Then they would be for it. And so, yeah. You know, I do feel like there's a way to talk about issues that is, it just brings out that jewel and everyone.
Yes. Well, what I love about that, and I'm going to ask Ashwini to speak to this because this is what much more her bailiwick than mine. But what you just said helped me to see that ego is always dealing in abstractions.
Yes.
Right? And the heart is right here in reality. Mm-hmm. So do I want to end poverty? I don't even know what that means, for God's sake.
Right.
And besides, it sounds really overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
So no. But do I want you to be hungry? Oh, my God,
right.
No. Do I want your children to go to bed hungry or not get an education or not have shoes? My God, no.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's big, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
All right. Thank you so much, Jill.
Thank you, guys. Nice to check in with you.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome anytime.
Okay. Thanks. Take care.
So, Ashwini, in the retreat that speaks to this issue, I always, no matter, I mean, I've done this retreat a lot of times, we hit abstraction, and I kind of go, tilt. But was I on track there?
Oh, yes. I mean, we talked about this at the monastery also, that we were reading about this in something else, right, that the intellect is is not verifiable. It's all conceptual. That nothing is true unless you verify it by your own experience.
Aha. Uh-huh. So, which argues for Zen, the direct experience, right, which is what was being pointed at. If I see somebody who's hungry, my heart opens and I want that person to be fed. But if it's just a concept that ego is noodling around about, then it's not that big a deal. And it doesn't really compare to my problem.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the only thing that ego wants me to find real.
Right. Well, and it's in talking about poverty, we've abstracted it from the person who is hungry that you're looking at, right? And so it's easy to talk about whether or not you have a position on anything until it happens to you in some way that actually makes it real for you that you have to experience.
Mm-hmm. Which is part of
beautiful. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No.
I was just, you know, we could debate anything, but I remember we were coming back from North Carolina and there was this 19-year-old Marine who was sitting next to us who couldn't afford to buy his food on the, he was hungry. He hadn't eaten for so many hours. He was just shipping out back from wherever he was deployed. And this was the first time he was seeing his family in a year or something. And he was hungry because they weren't serving food on the plane and he had to buy his food. And he didn't have the money to buy his food. And it was such a, of course we'll buy your food for you.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
we didn't have to have a debate about the military-industrial complex or whatever that is, or war, or the morality of people being there's just this kid who is doing what is really important to him, that he feels really good about, because he talked about it, right? Why he was doing what he was doing. It was very moving. And that really is all that matters, right? When we are there finding common ground right? Because we're all passionate about what we're passionate about, finding common ground, and then doing what we can do to participate with somebody.
Yes, I think that, that optical delusion operates on abstraction as a way to separate. And so we're so far away from thinking of even being in touch with what we're capable of or what we would do in a situation when we talk in the abstract.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We could have major conversations about poverty alleviation and whether, you know, welfare is worth it or not, or all of these abstract concepts that we hold positions about. But when you're faced with someone who's hungry sitting next to you on an airplane, would you say, no, I'm not going to buy you the food because I, on a principle level, don't believe in handouts? You know, it's just so foreign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. That's great. Thank you. Thank you, Ashwini, and thank you, Jill, for that. That was big for me.
Okay, here's our next caller. We have enthusiastic participation, Sherry.
Oh, excellent, excellent. We love that.
Yeah, here we go. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hey, Sherry. Hey, Ashwini, it's Elizabeth.
Hello, Elizabeth.
Hey, Elizabeth.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
What are you seeing?
Let's see. Okay, so I was really surprised that the quote was from Einstein.
Is that so? He's one of my great spiritual heroes.
Yeah, that meant more to me than if it was from some, I don't know, Zen patriarch. Is more convincing.
Uh-huh. Okay, good. So we won't delve heavily into positionality. Okay.
Yeah, because when it was Einstein, I mean, other, I couldn't just be like, yeah, or my conditioned part of my mind couldn't be like, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah.
Right. Yeah, because he's real and he's down to earth and he's a sharp guy who knows what's going on.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. So, but one thing it made me think of, one reason I was surprised it was Einstein is because he came from a Jewish background, or he was Jewish, and the version of Judaism that I was brainwashed with from when I was born is that, you know, we're different, and everything is about we're different from everybody.
So tedious, isn't it? And what an awful thing. Like, I, of course, I've worked with so many people over the years who talk about guilt, right? And they think that because they feel guilty because they were raised Jewish, or they feel guilty because they were raised Catholic, or they feel guilty because they were, right? So we get to this point in our lives and we realize, wow, ego is basically telling the same story to all people all the time and making them think that it's real because of, right? So you're different, you're separate because you're Jewish. You're different, you're separate because you're Catholic. You're different, you're separate because you're African-American. You're different, you're separate because you're, right? And it'll use anything. You're different, you're separate because you're a white male. Right? I don't know if you've tracked that, but that has been presented now as one of the discriminated against minorities.
Yeah. anyway, so, yeah, my question is, though, okay, so let's take all the, you know, zillions of Jewish ancestors or African Americans or whatever, but if your ethnic group is continually being, I'm not talking about today, I'm talking about in the past, is continually being scapegoated and scapegoating is just horrible. Psychically, just the worst thing that you can do to a people, then how would they even know that, you know, this is a story, it's not really true that we're different, because they didn't have, like, the Zen Awareness Program back then. How would they even know, I mean, that?
Well, Elizabeth, it's always, my point is, it's always been the same for everybody. Whatever situation is the one that the group that you're associated with is using to explain their life circumstances, that's the one that you're going to believe is true. So our work is to get beyond that in the sense of realizing that everybody is having the same experience. So one of the most popular things in humanity is to experience oneself as a victim and then victimize others. It's extremely popular. Now, we can do it on the simplest sort of way, right? So I grow up being victimized by an abusive father, okay, psychically, emotionally abusive, right? He was a bully and a tyrant, and his process was humiliation and that sort of thing, okay? And so I could then go out and behave badly and mistreat people because my father was a hateful, bully, tyrant who abused me. And I'd be perfectly justified. I mean, I hope you can see me as every person in this story, right? So we've all got a story about what happened to me that is causing me to be the way I am in the world. So now 7 billion plus of those stories and people using those stories to be less than the person that we could be, okay? So we lose sight completely of the golden rule, right? Because we're owed, because these awful things happen to us, because we're afraid, because. So if we stay in that mentality, then it'll go on forever. That's how it's perpetuated, right? Because nobody says, okay, good, something happened to everybody. Everybody's been mistreated. My favorite thing is child abuse is redundant, right? To grow up, for a child to grow up is an abusive process, to go from the innocence of childhood to all of the conditioning, the socialization, the hatefulness that a person has to go through in order to become a little finger marks in the air, productive member of society. It's hateful, it's horrible, it's awful. Happens to everybody. The most privileged people on the planet are still required to go through that same process. And if we watch, we get to see how these incredibly privileged people can feel like victims. So what we're all, I think, required to do is say, it's got to stop, and it's got to stop with me, because I'm the one who sees it.
Right. No, I get the teaching, and I get it, that teaching for myself and that practicing that teaching. I get that for myself.
Well, that's, Elizabeth, that's all we've got. That's all we've got, which is one of the things I like best about what the Buddha taught. He didn't say you've got to save everybody else. He didn't say you've got to turn everybody else's life around. He said each one of us has the opportunity to turn our life around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it really doesn't matter. It's finding the common ground. And, you know, whether we ever want to articulate or not, because it's a slippery slope, as they say, but just realizing something like what I just laid out, right, that everybody feels themselves victimized, okay, that everybody has a story of what happened to me and why I am the way I am. Now our job, once we realize that, is to stop. Now, instead of being part of the problem, now we're in a position to move over to being part of the solution. Okay? Because
right,
I know.
Right, I get that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get that.
Good.
For me, and that victimization is a good old story. But I mean, like, for people in the past who are going.
No, we can't worry about them. We can't. Yeah. If the Buddha, being a Hindu, and moving from reincarnation to rebirth, is right. Then, you know, everybody has as many chances as we need to get there. So we don't have to worry about what happened to anybody else in the past. Everybody has the same opportunity. If we don't get locked into belief systems where we have to explain how people who didn't have an opportunity to encounter the teachings of whatever will be lost forever, people believe a lot of nonsense. We don't have to.
I know. It does
seem
unfair, though. It's unfair. In the olden days, they didn't have, like, an awareness practice and therapy, and people just didn't have these things. So how could they have not?
Elizabeth?
Yeah.
If you start reading some history, okay, one of the things that you'll find, and it doesn't even have to be religious history, although that is such a fertile field, but if you just read history, you'll realize that there have always been people who understood, who got it. Always, in every age. We can, you know, if you get the daily peace quotes, we put out peace quotes from every age and every walk of life, right? There have always been people who see, always. We can join their ranks.
Well, that's why I'm amazed it's Albert Einstein who said that.
Oh, read Einstein. Don't read Einstein's theories. Read Einstein's life, and you'll see that he was a deeply, deeply spiritual man. Who became more so through the direct experience that he had of his study of physics. He was far more Zen than he was anything else by the end of his life.
It's interesting. Yeah. Okay, and my
All
only
right,
other.
Good.
Last...
Oh, well, we're at time anyway, so we might as well. What?
Okay, the only other thing was that you had mentioned, like, guilt, and in passing you had mentioned guilt. And I called into the show today because I felt guilty, like, I haven't tried to call in again since I didn't get on when I called in, and so.
Yeah, well, to me, Elizabeth, that's what awareness practice is. You know, we see what that optical delusion that is ego does to us, what it does to us, what it does to others, what it does to the world, and we make a choice not to perpetuate it any longer than necessary. So we see it, you know. I will tell you this, and you know, if you choose to, you could accept what I'm saying and use it as a working hypothesis. Okay, guilt is an absolutely useless self-indulgence.
Okay, hang on. I'm bringing my recorder. Hang on. Okay.
These are recorded. These are recorded, Elizabeth. These are recorded.
I know, but
okay?
I just want to
guilt is an absolutely useless self-indulgence. So it is possible for us simply to say no to it. When we do that, we are so much more available for life to use us as life would like to use us. So when we are introduced to notions like that, I didn't make this up. It was introduced to me. I was introduced to it, however you want to say that. And we begin to practice with those kinds of notions. Okay, there is a whole set of things that do nothing but feed ego. If we realize that, then we do the John Nash diet of the mind, right, where we just simply say no to certain ideas and behaviors. We are no longer going to indulge those. And as we do that, we strengthen and our resolve solidifies not solidifies. That's not a good word. It does, but it creates a bad image. Okay, but we feel ourselves more grounded, more capable, stronger in our practice of choosing this here now instead of noodling around up in conditioned mind. All right, so we are at time, and I thank
know.
You. I enjoyed that very much. And,
I got it on the
again,
eighth folder. I'm good.
Good. Good. And again, they're all recorded, so you can go there and listen to the whole thing if you choose to. All right. Thank
okay.
you, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Wow, what an interesting show, Sherry.
Einstein's good. We'll get we might get some Carl Jung and some Thomas Merton going forward. other folks who came to a realization of the value of the direct experience in life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All
well,
right.
And
thank
it's,
you,
it's,
Ashwini.
It's,
oh.
Well, I
Go
was
ahead.
Saying, just to tie it all together, right, that seeking the common ground is the everything that was being talked about in the show is to go beyond the self. Right? Guilt is
yes.
self-indulgence.
Yes.
When it's about me, it's creating the optical delusion, and the whole series of conversations we've been having about love and compassion as the way beyond the self. How do we
yeah.
find the non-separation instead of the separation?
Instead yes.
of reinforcing that which makes it about me, that which makes it about me and my tribe, that which makes it about what has happened to me, what was done to me, and et cetera. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just let it be about us, move into a we position, and from there, we may not always meet our standards, most of which are ego standards, but we know that we want to do our best to come from that non-separate we, loving kindness, compassion, understanding, non-judgment place.
Yeah. Well, I would invite everyone who didn't get on today to press *6 tomorrow because we had a lot of callers.
Oh, good. Yes, please.
Okay.
Join us tomorrow.
All right.
Thank you, Ashwini.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Thanks,
everybody.
Sherry.